Listener production.
Lindsay.
Jacob.
Guess what?
What?
Finally, it's here. The Chippendales TV show.
Ooh,
welcome
hello.
To Chippendales. Shortly after we did our episode a year ago about the Chippendales crime spree, it was announced that they were going to make a TV miniseries dedicated to all these wild, wild antics. This, I have to say, was one of my favourite episodes to research in all of Gistery, but I don't remember much about it.
I was going to say, I completely forgot about it.
There were murders, mm-hmm. there was arson, there was drug smuggling, there was technically illegal sex work going mm-hmm. on. There was all sorts of wild behaviour, but I can't remember the details, so I'm so excited to watch mm-hmm. this. The first three episodes are out now. This is not an ad, by the way, listeners. We are not being paid, sponsored in any way to promote this, but if you've got Disney Plus, you can now watch the first three episodes of, I think it's a 9-episode series,
that's a
so
lot.
There's going to be plenty more to come. Murray Bartlett is one of the stars of the show. He's playing Nick DeNoia. Do you know who Murray Bartlett is?
Unless they were on Gilmore Girls or The OC, I don't know them.
And I don't know if he was on The OC or Gilmore
I'm sure
Girls.
That he wasn't.
But he was in The White Lotus last year, season one. He was the concierge on there and mm-hmm. everyone fell in love with him. Mm-hmm. And that's wonderfully led to a bunch of exciting new roles for him. He's an Australian, actually.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and an openly proud gay actor
right.
as well. So he's going to be sensational. So anyway, because we got so excited about this TV show coming out, Lindsay and I, well, I'll certainly be binging it and I'm going to give Lindsay my Disney Plus login and try to convince her to watch it as well, even though it's not on the ABC or YouTube. we'll try to get her on board. But yeah, we just thought it'd be a good idea to celebrate the release of this TV series to republish one of our favourite episodes about the Chippendales crime spree.
And because we have completely forgotten all about it and we were there for it, even if you did listen to the episode a year ago, you've probably forgotten all about it too.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting for you to revisit it and then you'll be able to watch the events unfold on the telly.
I'll be interested to hear your review actually and how it compares the TV version compared to the actual real story because we know that Fiona a few weeks ago told us this real story of The Watcher, which you watched on Netflix and hated.
So
I'll be interested to see quality of the show and also the historical accuracy.
Yeah, well, Ryan Murphy had nothing to do with it.
Okay,
so
we're safe then.
Yeah, we're already off to a good start. Cool. All right, enjoy, listeners. Okay.
Let's do this.
All right. So if you listened last week, you already know, I'm assuming, that I am doing the story of the Chippendales crime spree, which spanned years. And it's a very, very juicy story. All of the seven deadly sins are featured: lust, greed, pride, all of them. And we're talking about a series of murders and arsons and various other felonies that happened mostly throughout the 80s and the 90s, all in the name of growing and protecting the Chippendales brand. And along the way, it's also a story about how this one little nightclub in Los Angeles managed to significantly shift mainstream culture around the world forever. And at the center of it all is this really ambitious, greedy, vindictive, paranoid man who owned the Chippendales and was just willing to do whatever it took to get to the top and stay there.
The top of the very tiny, whitey, sparkly G-string heap, male heap.
He wanted to be the cream. That's right. So what do you think of when I say Chippendales?
Chippendales, I think of like male stripper shows.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the famous like dance, like kind of like because anything for women is always better. So it's not seedy. Like you don't go to a seedy strip club like men do. It's like a full-on concert. Women all go together for like hens parties and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The men come out and do massive dance numbers that always end up in them in tiny little knickers. I don't think they ever go full Monty.
No, they don't take
and,
it all off.
It's a lot of like audience participation, bringing up like, you know, the hen of the hens group up on stage and rubbing up against her. I remember we went to, it wouldn't have been Chippendales branded because there's so many copycats now, but for Rhiannon's 21st, we went on a male stripper cruise.
Uh-huh.
And it was like women go crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Like the energy in the room reaches mass hysteria, fever pitch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's just, and like, it's kind of like, I guess what the end product of it was Magic Mike.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Chippendales kicked this all off.
Yeah, exactly.
None of this existed.
Never.
And
it wasn't
kind of
even
by accident
on anyone's mind that men could do this. Stripping was for women when this when Chippendales started.
This all kind of happened by accident.
Yeah.
Along the way.
Tell us about it.
All right. So we'll kick off in July of 1991, 30 years ago this year, and a troupe of very buff, very tanned, very aggressively American male exotic dancers were on tour.
Aggressively American.
In the UK. That was a big part of their gimmick. They were the men of Hollywood. The troupe was called Adonis. And it wasn't
like you.
It was just a direct ripoff of the Chippendale shows. There were copycats all over the place at this point. And one night in Blackpool, just very shortly after the show had commenced, the MC was on stage and called down immediately and told, "We have to put you into protective custody because the FBI has found out that someone has hired an assassin to kill you."
To kill the MC of a little stripper, male stripper show.
And his manager and a couple of other members of the dance troupe using cyanide injections of all things.
Wowzers. And so these weren't the Chippendales. These were a copycat.
No, that's right.
Okay.
They were ex-Chippendales though.
Oh.
They'd left Chippendales to go and work at Adonis. Mm. And the FBI, when they found out about this, they were sort of like, what? But they had to be responsible and take action. So they investigated the threat. And then it turned out that was just the first loose thread that when they started pulling on it, it unraveled this mess of crimes that had happened over the course of decades that were all linked back to a guy called Steve Banerjee, who was the man who owned the Chippendales. And when it was at its prime at that point in the early 90s, Chippendales was making $35 million a year from tours and from merch and from the clubs they ran in the States. But that empire started off with very, very humble beginnings in 1973. So when he was 27, Shoman Banerjee, that was his original name before he changed it to Steve. Yeah, he's an Indian immigrant and that's a traditional Bengali name.
I thought he just called himself Shoman.
Pure coincidence because he did go on to create these shows based on these showmen.
Should have kept his traditional name.
Would have worked really nicely, he was a very entrepreneurial kind of guy. He'd moved from India to Canada and then the States in the 60s, started off working as a janitor, saved his money, bought a petrol station, saved his money, bought another petrol station, sold them both and bought a nightclub in West Los Angeles.
Yep.
Had absolutely no idea what he was doing, but he just had this dream that he wanted to be the next Hugh Hefner and live a really decadent lifestyle, surrounded by glamorous people and be filthy rich. The American dream.
It's kind of like how kids these days, you ask them what they want to be and they say TikTok stars. Back in the day, men wanted to be Hugh Hefner.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he figured buying a nightclub was the way he was going to move forward with that. So he renamed the club from Round Robin to Destiny 2 because this was his new destiny, his second destiny.
I guess it also makes people feel like there's a Destiny 1, so then they think it's like the second of a fancy
An
series.
Updated
of
version.
Yeah.
There was not. And it really didn't draw much of a crowd at first. It looked like the club was headed for failure in its first few years. And then in 75, a guy called Ray Colone started hanging out in the club and he made friends with Banerjee. And according to Ray Colone, he was the one that told Banerjee, look, if you want to turn this place around and actually draw in a crowd, you've got to get rid of that crappy band and start playing disco music. That's what everyone's into right now. What's going to attract the ladies. And you got to get some better lighting and better sound systems. And Steve followed his advice. It did the trick. Destiny 2 became very popular on weekends. It was the only club that was open till 4 in the morning in Los Angeles.
Remember when the only clubs open till 4 or 5 in the morning were the gay clubs in Sydney?
I wonder if we'll go back to that.
I don't think so. And even if we did, I'm too old now.
Yeah.
That's past my time.
So weekends, great, but pretty quiet the other nights of the week. And so Banerjee was trying really hard to find a way to get people excited to come to the club on the quiet nights so he could actually start turning a profit. And so he tried out a few gimmicks like backgammon tournaments and disco classes. Women's mud wrestling was the most successful thing that he experimented with.
Because why are men?
But even that success was relatively minor. So he was constantly on the lookout for this magical element that would bring in a big crowd every night. And then it was 1978 that he decided the missing ingredient was opulence. So he refurbished the entire club with very luxe-looking Chippendale-style furniture, which is like elaborate 18th-century-style dark wood, velvet.
You know who likes that style?
Could it be Caleb? Yeah.
Of course he does.
He would have loved it.
Yeah.
And based on how he'd fit the club out, he decided to rename it Chippendales to make it sound super sophisticated.
Classy.
Yes.
And then he tarnished that name forever.
It did draw a crowd, but it didn't solve all of his problems because there were still a lot of quiet nights. And also disco was starting to wane in popularity at this time. So even on the busy nights, he was making less money. So he was getting pretty desperate. He needed a big attraction that was going to keep him afloat. And then one day, late in 78, Banerjee accepted a meeting request from a very sleazy slimeball named Paul Snyder, whom we met last week. If you've listened to last week's episode about Dorothy Stratton and her life with Paul Snyder, you know that Dorothy was the rising star at Playboy at this time and that everyone in her life, including Hugh Hefner, wanted her to get rid of Snyder from the minute he arrived in Los Angeles because you could just tell on site that he was a terrible hemorrhoid of a person. And even Banerjee hated Snyder, but like I said, he was a little bit desperate and kind of willing to try anything.
You know, as soon as you just said the word hemorrhoid, it reminded me that we are like so mid-30s, approaching middle age, that the other night when you and I were out getting drunk, we spent like an hour talking about how we had dealt with our hemorrhoids. Not like current, just in the past. We had this really in-depth conversation about hemorrhoids and how we treated them and how they worked and like how annoying they were. And it's just like how times have changed.
That didn't need to leave the table.
I feel like it's the, I feel like people can relate, you know, like when you're 25, you talk about like what boys you like and who you're going to kiss on the weekend. And when you're 35, you're like, oh my God, how do you deal with your hemorrhoids? And I just love the insult. I think subconsciously you called him a hemorrhoid of a human because you were remembering our conversation from the other night when we had a rager and got home at 9:45.
Oh, Merry Christmas, Jisners. I hope you enjoyed that. Yeah, so Snyder sold himself as this club promoter with incredible connections through Dorothy to Playboy and to Hugh Hefner and tried to act like he was this big player.
Which, after listening to our episode last week, you know he had no connections. No. He was just a hustler loser.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Banerjee recognised it. Like, he could just tell from the way Snyder dressed the type of guy he was. But he sort of heard Snyder out. He pitched ideas Banerjee had already tried, like hottest man in Los Angeles competitions, but we'll get the Playboy bunnies to judge it, or wet
That's
t-shirt
actually not a bad
competitions.
Idea. Yeah. Yeah.
But it was the sort of thing that had already been tried. Yeah. So it was like, meh, Banerjee said, go away, work out the financials, and then come back and see me once you've got something more concrete. Which Snyder did in January of 1979, but this time he came back with a totally different idea. He said, I went to this gay club in Canada, they had a strip show, and I saw the gays go absolutely apeshit for it, and I think women would do the same thing. I think we should do a male strip competition, but only allow women to come into the club.
Yeah.
And he'd had all the numbers figured out. It looked kind of favourable, so Banerjee was like, okay, nothing really to lose. Let's go ahead and give it a go. Snyder was going to take care of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it was February 1979 that Chippendales ran their first ever male stripper competition. Very amateur. The cast were just random guys who'd been scouted at the beach and at gyms. And Snyder had just sleazed up to them and asked them if they wanted to come to
like
this club and strip off for women. Well, it was a competition, so you could win $100
Oh, wow.
If
okay.
you were the best performer.
Yeah.
And the show was completely loose, no choreography really, apart
just
from what each guy had
just,
come up with.
Yeah, dance to the music. Yeah. Okay.
No costumes. Some of the acts, though, were quite good. They did some sort of cool acrobatic stuff, but a lot of them were really appalling. Like, they just took their clothes off and wiggled their junk
in
women's
which
faces.
It's just a sign of, like, I can do the Adele interview. Like, I can go, like, I've seen women strip. I'm sure it's easy. It's actually extremely hard to do it in an entertaining way.
That women are going to actually enjoy instead of just having something flop towards their nose. Anyway, the women who were there absolutely loved it. So the first night, the place was kind of half full. The very next week, they were completely sold out.
Can you imagine the revelation it would have been at the time for the very first time ever as a woman to be allowed to celebrate the female gaze on a man rather than the male gaze on a woman? Like, I can't even imagine how transformative that would have felt to have that power dynamic flip and for you to be the one in the audience screaming, take it off.
Yep. And as soon as women started expressing that, Chippendales took that message and ran with it. And they were all like, yes, we entertain, but we empower. We are.
Kind of felt like it, I'm sure, felt like it at the time, though. Yeah.
Felt like role reversal.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. The one issue was, though, Paul Snyder was the MC.
Didn't suck.
He was dreadful.
Of course he
was.
Yeah. But again, I can do the Adele interview. I can MC the show. No, you can't, Paul. Yeah. Get a professional.
The only reason to keep Snyder around was because he was bringing Dorothy to the club and she was bringing her Playboy bunny friends. And so that was kind of elevating the reputation even further.
And I bet she hated even going. I bet she was just like, oh, okay, I'll go.
She actually had a really fun time with her friends.
But I think she would have had a fun time with her friends going, but I think it was like as if she wanted to be doing this thing for Paul. Like it would have just been like, fine, I'll do it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, within a matter of weeks, the show was a sensation on the media because it was transgressive. It was getting loads of attention and it was just novel. The idea of women paying their own money that they'd earned themselves to see men jiggle around in G-strings.
You mean women are sexual? Women get turned on? What?
But yeah, quirky and genius. The concept was on the nights the shows were happening, it was strictly women only until 10 p.m. Then the men were allowed in. And that drew a huge crowd of men because they all wanted to come and pick up a woman who'd been warmed up by the show, pre-moistened,
pre-fluffed, pre-moistened. pre-moistened.
So, Chippendales.
How long do you think women are moist for? It's not. They're not.
I don't want to know. I don't need to know.
Women aren't moist for hours until penetration. It's like not okay. Well, I'll explain some things to you about women's genitalia after the show.
Hard pass. yeah, so the club was packed well beyond capacity. And pretty early on, Dorothy Stratton had the very cute idea to put the male dancers and the male hosts into the little cuffs and collars and bow ties. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was the one who got Hugh Hefner to give his blessing to use his trademark costume. So that became a big part of the Chippendales brand. Early on, the buzz kept getting bigger and bigger over the course of a few months. And then they quickly realized we just can't keep going with Paul Snyder as the MC here. He was humorless, charmless, robotic.
And also a real sleaze. Like women, I imagine, were going to these events as like a safe space for women. You're surrounded by women. Women hold the power in this room. And then you've got this sleazy man making you feel like he is just like every sleazy guy you've ever met at a club. He probably tried to hit on a bunch of them. Like,
no doubt.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can imagine that it was just like, this has outgrown you extremely fast. You need to get lost.
So Banerjee brought in a radio DJ guy called Richard, and Richard had no idea what he was showing up for that night, but he got out on stage and went for it, did a fantastic job, whipped the crowd into a frenzy, which wasn't particularly difficult. So Snyder was out, Richard was in, and once Banerjee didn't need Snyder at all anymore, he stopped giving him a cut of the profits. And Snyder was like, but this is my idea. And Banerjee was sort of like, prove it. We don't have it in writing anywhere. goodbye.
I mean,
and
I
banned
know
him from the club.
I know how much of an asshole Snyder is, so I don't feel bad for him. But at the same time, I'm like, he kind of has a point. It was his idea, but if he wasn't smart enough to get some kind of contract signed, then prove it, man. You're an idiot. Yeah.
He kept trying to hang around at the club like a rancid fart. So then, like, they literally told all the bouncers he's not allowed in anymore. Mm-hmm. And that dispute is believed by a lot of people who were around at that time to be one of the main inciting incidents that led to him being so desperate to hang on to Dorothy.
Yeah.
And ultimately that tragically led to her murder.
Because the Playboy Mansion banned him as well. Mm. They stopped letting him in because he was just so annoying.
Yeah.
A weird hanger-on. Yeah.
So goodbye, Paul Snyder. We won't talk about him any further. Richard, the new MC, loved his gig. Mm-hmm. He was a very sort of goofy-looking, skinny guy. He wore a white tuxedo and roller skates while he was on stage.
That's hilarious.
He was kind of like the comic relief in between all the sexy, sexy men.
And it just proves that things like that are a skill. Like, to MC is a real skill. Mm. I often get asked to MC things and I say no. Like, it is just not a skill set I have to be an MC. People often assume I do, but I'm like, no, it is a very difficult thing to do and I'm just not very good at it. And so it's just funny that Paul Snyder assumed he could do it, but then they send in a professional who just gets it like that because to be an MC is really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he wasn't just being an MC as well. He was kind of adding some creative direction. Mm. So he was the one who said, look, why don't we have maybe some input on what the guys wear before they take it off? And maybe we should have some input in their routines and maybe we should request that they wear deodorant and cologne.
Ah, yes. Oh,
that'd be a nice little touch. Mm-hmm. And so he was starting to make some progress there. Then one night, the LAPD showed up in the middle of a show and shut everything down for indecent exposure.
Really? Yep.
So they'd been tipped off that the men were getting naked.
But strip clubs with women don't get shut down. Oh, why are men? That is gender dynamics to the max.
And also Banerjee was like, technically they're not naked. No one's taking their G-string off.
All the way.
And they just argued, well, we can see enough of their butt that that's technically public nudity. So they arrested all of the dancers. They also fined Chippendales quite a lot of money because they'd witnessed the women groping the dancers. And that was one of the technicalities that in a venue like that, there could be no touching. And
meanwhile, those police that night after the arrest would have gone to their local strip joint and, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then whenever they had interactions with the cops, a lot of the cops would be like, so how do I get a job here?
Yeah, right?
Yeah. They could see how much fun it was and how much money they could potentially be making.
They could make, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Women ain't cheap.
Yeah. So the show was shut down that week, but it was well and truly back the following week with a bigger crowd than ever because of the media coverage about the raid. Seeing those cops in the club in their uniforms is what gave Richard an idea. We need to come up with a character for each of the dancers. And so he worked with each of them to elevate their costumes, polish up their choreo, and tell a bit of a story with their performance. Mm-hmm. So there was a biker, there was a cowboy, there was a Zorro, there was a cop, of course. So it was intended to be something for every woman's fantasy. Yeah. They also introduced a no-touching policy, which was absolutely not enforced, but it sort of made it naughtier and more transgressive to touch the dancers. Not only were they touching them as well, they introduced a thing called the tip and kiss, where any time a woman waved any cash in front of a dancer, he'd have to go over and pash her on the mouth.
Oh, no. And so gross for them.
Each of the dancers, every performance they were doing, they were kissing like 300 to 400 women every night because everyone wanted a piece of them.
They must have been making and the cold sores they must have got.
I know. The diseases they would have been spreading. It's so weird watching the footage of this in a COVID world.
COVID would have killed everyone in that room.
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Obviously, Banerjee packed in more shows each week. Women of all ages were coming from around America. The dancers really loved their jobs because one of the perks was they always had a line of women who wanted to go home with them at the end of the night, sometimes two or three.
I remember at Rhiannon's 21st, one of the girls we were with hooked up with one of the dancers afterwards. Yeah. Like after the ship was a boat, docked in Darling Harbour, we all went on to like clubs around Darling Harbour and all the dancers just went to where all the girls went.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did they charge? Do you know?
What do you mean charge?
Well, the guys from Chippendales, they started off going home with the women for free and then they realised that they could start charging a few hundred dollars. Also,
they were like sex workers.
Yeah.
No. The dancers just came and hooked up with girls because mm-hmm. they knew there was 500 girls there that wanted to hook up with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it wasn't charged.
At Chippendales, it reached the point where they had orgy rooms in the back of the club. So they'd invite some of the female patrons back and, they would
and
just
And did
go
you
for
have
it.
To pay to enter the orgy rooms?
No, the women were invited.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Mm. It's always interesting to me, and it's a kind of double standard in the direction of women this time, that, like, it's always assumed that for men, oh, you don't need to pay them for sex work because they just like the sex. It's like, no, they also deserve to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
Pay them.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yep.
Yeah, anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
It is, yes. And yeah, they were flying this flag of this is about female empowerment. We're giving the ladies of the 80s exactly what they want. But at the same time, the dancers were being pretty juvenile a lot of the time. So anytime they'd see a woman in a boob tube, they'd go over to her and pull it down. Shark attack
her. Shark attack.
Yes.
Sharking.
And like lifting up women's skirts and stuff as well. So that all kind of needed to be tampered down.
One thing I will say with the dynamic, having gone to this one strip show when I was at Rihanna's birthday and then I guess having watched the Magic Mike films, is that when women are watching male strippers, it does seem like, I'm sure it sort of wasn't like this at first, but over time, the power is with the strippers. Mm. The power is with the men who are like, you know, holding this room to ransom and all the women want them and they'll kiss the woman they want and they get a woman up on stage and let her. And it feels like, you know, when men go to seedy women's strip clubs, it's like, you'll do what I want, bitch. Here's a dollar. Mm. But it's very, even in a situation where women are meant to be empowered, the power balance still swung back to the men.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Agreed. Yeah. The women didn't mind though.
No.
They kept flocking there.
Of course, because it's
they
fun.
Loved everything about it. But even though the popularity of the space was growing week on week on week, Banerjee wasn't going to just wait for word of mouth to do his PR for him. He came up with a very savvy marketing strategy to basically use all the free press he was getting thanks to the protesters who hated Chippendales. So there was a group of men who literally tried to sue Chippendales for discrimination because they weren't allowed in to see the show and they thought that was unfair.
Oh, I thought because they weren't allowed to dance. And I was like, probs because you're ugh. But no, because they're not allowed in.
Yes.
Oh, but why do they want to go in?
Because they wanted to be able to heckle it down, I think.
Oh, get effed.
Yeah.
Go away.
They just didn't want the women to have something.
To have something.
That they
like, this space
so much.
Is not for you. Can
they
there be
really
one thing that is not for you? Mm. Please.
Also, there were lots of complaints from neighbours about noise and how Chippendales was destroying the peace because every morning they'd have to clear empty wine bottles and use condoms off their lawns because when
women
everyone left in a frenzy.
Boob tubes down around their pants in the gutter. Best night ever! Mm. Yeah.
Woo! There was also a very real issue that Banerjee was constantly exceeding crowd limits in the club. So safely he could fit 300 people in there, but he was packing in more than 600 people night after night, which was a massive fire hazard. So he was fined again and again and again.
Yeah.
And he just happily paid the fines because that was small change compared to the money that was coming through the door. And every fine meant a headline. So it was cheaper than paying for advertising.
Oh, yeah, that's smart.
Yeah. He wanted to draw as much controversy as possible because when women heard about these scandals, their key takeaway was sexy muscle men are taking
There's
their clothes off.
There's a male
strip
club? Yeah. Right. Okay. That's smart. That's clever.
So he was very actively stoking the controversies. One of the things I thought was most entertaining was that he'd call up evangelical church groups and tell them, we've heard that the men are getting full frontal dicks out naked in there.
So then they'd go off.
They'd go and protest.
Oh, that's so smart.
And they'd call the cops.
Yes.
And then he'd call up the media and tip them off that there was going to be this big protest
that
outside
really
the club
smart.
And then the cops were going to show up and raid the place. It was genius, and it just kept bringing more
That's
and more
really
patrons
smart.
In. And even the controversy about what happened with Dorothy Stratton and Paul Snyder in a way worked in their favour because the connection that they had to Chippendales was reported on. it did absolutely nothing to diminish their popularity, even immediately.
Just got the story further out there.
They were still sold out all the nights shortly after Dorothy was found dead. Then in 1981, they were ready to take things to the next level. They brought in a new director slash choreographer to really elevate the show. His name was Nick DeNoia, and he was a classic showbiz guy, actor, director, presenter, producer, full of charm, very charismatic, magnetic energy.
So they got to the point where they were like, we can't just string some songs together like us with our show. We're like, we got to rehearse. We got to plan something. We got to actually put on a proper show if we're asking people to pay money to come.
Especially because the same women were coming back quite a lot.
Right.
And it's like, we've got to refresh this.
Yeah.
It's unclear whether DeNoia saw the show and approached Banerjee and said, I want to help you. I want to come on board, or if Banerjee reached out to him. But either way, he was an Emmy winner for producing kids' TV shows. In the 1970s, he won several Emmys for a show called Unicorn Tales that sort of retold fairy tales, classic fairy tales, but modern day versions of them. So he came on board and he overhauled the entire show. He added in storylines. Yep.
Yeah, he knew how to do it.
Lighting cues, original scoring, and he was the one who introduced group numbers for the first time as well. It had only been individuals up to that point.
Because that's the famous, like, the famous kind of male stripper thing is five guys, like a boy band, dancing in sync, dancing in unison and stripping off their gear at the same,
And they'd never done that previously.
I can't believe they hadn't done that before. Yeah. Oh, wow. So he's really like, this is going from an amateur club night to a professional theatre
show.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
That's right. Erased pretty much everything that existed before he got there. Mm-hmm. Replaced Richard as the MC, got a sexier guy in.
Aw, Richard. Oh, yeah. My.
Gave
well.
Richard no credit for what he'd done in the first 2 years of the show's existence.
He had fun while it lasted.
Yeah. He tried to sue, didn't get very far with that.
Yeah, probably not.
No.
Yeah.
And DeNoia then focused on whipping the dancers into shape and getting them disciplined, gave them a grueling rehearsal schedule. He was a total perfectionist and he would fire anyone who didn't follow direction.
Well, that's
very
different from like having been approached on the beach 2 years ago, spending the next 2 years of your life just turning up to this club and dancing to the music however you feel, to suddenly having a professional Broadway producer expecting you to rehearse 10 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Huge culture shock.
Yes.
They used to just show up, take off their clothes, go home with a couple of women.
Yeah, and then wake up at 2 p.m. the next day.
That's right.
Go back in again. And so now they're like, oh, sorry, this is what being a professional actor feels like. Mm-hmm. Get used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Banerjee, meanwhile, was trying to have some input on the new show, but his ideas were like, why don't we have the guys rub whipped cream all over their bodies? And Nick just completely ignored him.
That's not Broadway. That's not Broadway.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But the fact that he was being ignored and all of his concepts weren't making it into the show started to really ruffle Banerjee's petticoats.
I bet.
But Nick got results. The new show was exactly what the women wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And also around that time, Chippendales started to become a household name because they launched calendars. Banerjee was very, very smart.
Yep.
He started branching into merchandise because he knew that women would spend money on images that they could have forever of these gorgeous men. So calendars were a huge moneymaker. So then they expanded into playing cards and mugs and teddy bears. They eventually did workout videos as well. The merchandise empire itself was a huge wing of the business.
Smart.
The next necessary step from there was to open a second club in New York City because that was the global capital of nightclubs.
Oh, and of theatre.
Mm, absolutely.
Which is what they were becoming, a theatre show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where Nick was from as well.
Yeah, right, okay.
So he agreed to move over to New York City, set up the new show, took a lot of the best dancers from the LA club with him, got heaps of TV coverage using his industry connections to promote the expansion into New York, and so it was an instant success. All the biggest, coolest celebrities went to see Chippendales on the Upper East Side.
Yeah. It's like when Magic Mike, like not the film Magic Mike, but the original show Magic Mike that Channing Tatum was in, was a real novelty that famous people would go to for lols. It was like fun, a fun thing to do. Yeah,
totally. And so it'd be reported on that Brooke Shields is having her birthday party there. Andy Warhol just showed up with some of his friends. And the dancers became regulars on daytime talk shows from that point onwards because people wanted to hear about their perspective. So you can imagine Phil Donahue, Sally Jesse Raphael, Joan Rivers, they all regularly had the Chippendales on.
This is why I love women so much, because when have you ever heard of men being so interested in their female strippers' lives that they want them on daytime TV to hear about them?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there's a male stripper show that is phenomenally popular, and the first thing women say is, get them on daytime TV. I want to hear more about their lives.
After they've done a little number,
of
which
course,
they always
do. Get a little number.
And then while they're doing the interview, of course, they're sitting there in their little cuffs, collars, and
and talk about how they send money home to their mum and whatever. I just think that's quite sweet.
Yeah.
Women are like, yes, strip, I like that, but also tell me about your childhood.
Mm-hmm. It got amazing ratings whenever they had the Chippendales on, of course, because it's mostly women who are watching TV at home during the day.
At home ironing at 12 p.m.
Yeah, so they kept back again and again and again, and DeNoia was always there on set with the dancers. Mm-hmm. He presented himself as the face of Chippendales. Always delivering the talking points about female empowerment and gender equality, and he became known as Mr. Chippendale. He was introduced as the founder, the creator, the genius, and Banerjee was very bitter about this. Yes. When honestly, he should have been grateful because DeNoia, like I said, very charismatic.
Took it to the next level.
Yes.
Yeah.
And on TV, because he was media savvy and he was handsome, people loved to see him. Yeah. Whereas Banerjee, he was really shy. He found it very difficult to speak on camera. English wasn't his first language. He had a pretty bad stutter.
You can't just do the Adele interview. Media is a really hard thing to do. It takes a lot of practice, a lot of getting used to.
So he should have just been so grateful. Oh, DeNoia's doing such a wonderful job.
Yeah, like he can be the public face.
Exactly.
But I bet Banerjee has an ego and he wants to be the public
face.
That's
right.
Of course.
Yes. He tried doing a bit of media training, but it wasn't working. He realized how much he hated it, but he just resented that DeNoia was getting the credit for what he saw as his idea, which he'd stolen from someone anyway. And so this power struggle started to kind of escalate. They were both trying to assert their authority. Banerjee would like change the cast in the LA show without DeNoia knowing about it, or he'd change up the choreography and
so
DeNoia would get so furious.
Banerjee just starts making like dumb decisions just for the sake of it, just to be like, I can make decisions too, even though like just let him do it.
Yep.
He knows what he's doing.
That's right. So they were openly having screaming fights with each other in front of their staff. And the conflict, it just continued to fester and fester because each one was, you know, intentionally overstepping with the other one.
Yeah.
And then Nick, who was starting to get pretty miserable and very frustrated because he was putting so much into this business but felt like he was being undervalued, he started asking for more money. He made Chippendales the thing it was, but Banerjee, notoriously cheap, just refused. So Nick then proposed another idea. He believed they could take the show on the road.
On the road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Women were already going to LA and New York purely to see the show. Why not take the show to them?
Mm.
And one night at dinner in a diner, Banerjee finally agreed to give DeNoia the rights to the Chippendales touring show in perpetuity. As long as Banerjee got a cut of the ticket sales. Now, because the tour didn't exist yet, Banerjee thought he was giving DeNoia nothing at all. He didn't think there was potential in a tour at all.
He's stupid.
He also didn't know what in perpetuity meant.
Oh, that means forever.
Yes, correct.
Yes.
He thought it might mean in theory.
Oh, no. Oh, and because he's a man with an ego, he's like, I can do the Adele interview. I can sign this contract without knowing what it means.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just assume what it means. Oh.
He thought he was tricking DeNoia.
No, sweetheart. No. Get a dictionary.
By the way, the agreement was drawn up on a napkin and they shook hands and signed it.
Still signed. That holds up in court.
Legally binding.
Two people signing an agreement. It can be written on anything. I watch enough Law and Order. I know.
Mm-hmm. So this is like a pivotal point in this story. The fact that Nick now had the rights to the Chippendales tour and off he went to focus on getting that set up.
Steve Banerjee is so dumb because basically what he just did is give himself one little show in LA, one little show in New York, and Denoyer gets the rest of the world.
Yes.
Is basically what he just did. Mm-hmm. In perpetuity, which means forever.
That's right.
What an idiot.
Mm. So as I'm sure you can tell, the tour became the biggest
huge
part of the business because they were performing to 2,000, 4,000, 6,000 women every single night, always sold out, whatever city they went to. And then that led to even more media coverage for Nick Denoyer. They started calling him the Sultan of Strippers and he happily took full credit for his creation. And again, Banerjee should have just been grateful because he was making buckets of cash. Mm. He was not having to do anything really, but instead he just got more and more bitter. He hated that Denoyer owned the rights to the tour and that he was getting the lion's share of ticket sales.
You signed it, dummy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Plus Denoyer was getting a cut of the bar sales. Mm. So Banerjee just felt like he'd been completely tricked. So he started
not up. Not tricked. Denoyer was just smarter than you and you were dumb.
That's right. Y'all.
Yeah.
So he decided to start up his own Chippendales tour in competition with Denoyer, but also in competition with himself. Exactly. It's in breach of the contract that he made with Nick. So Nick tried to sue Banerjee and the whole thing just became completely toxic from that point onwards. So Denoyer left the Chippendales, meant that he was no longer an employee of Banerjee's, but he still owned
the tour,
the original Chippendales tour. Yes.
Okay.
So he was still taking his cut and he was still in charge of running the tour. And he was still making an enormous amount of money.
And also, Banerjee, no matter what tour he puts together, it's never going to be as good as Denoyer's.
Oh, no.
Because Denoyer is an Emmy Award-winning producer.
That's right.
Like, he knows how to put on a show. Banerjee is a rando with a nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he would just hire the guys that would look really great in a calendar or on a mug rather than the guys who could actually, like,
put on a show.
Kickstep
make
turn.
It entertaining.
Yeah.
Do a bloody, what do you call it? Kickball change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then Denoyer decided to get another bite of the cherry by starting up his own new male exotic dance tour that would essentially compete with the Chippendales, but America's a very big country, so he figured they wouldn't be anywhere near the same cities at the same time. So he called this new company US Male, M-A-L-E.
That's clever. Does that remind you of, was it Ark? No, it wasn't Ark. It was Stonewall in Oxford Street in Sydney used to have a male night, M-A-I-L-E, but technically M-A-I-L. And what happened was they had little letters and you would write on it to someone else in the club, like, I think you're sexy. And then you'd give it to a super sexy gay in a little male outfit and he'd go and deliver it to the person. Mm. And it was like male night.
Seems so innocent in the age of Grindr, doesn't it?
I know. I miss the Sydney gay club scene, mid-2000s.
Heyday. Their tagline for US Male was, "We deliver."
You do.
Mm-hmm. And Denoyer started headhunting dancers from Chippendales as well as recruiting his own new talent. And he started making plans for a calendar because he really wanted to hit Banerjee where it hurt.
Yeah, hit the merch.
So the goal was take Banerjee on head-to-head while still taking a chunk of the profits from the Chippendales tour. So he had won.
Yeah.
And at that same time, Banerjee embarrassed himself very, very badly. He ordered hundreds of thousands of Chippendales calendars that he'd signed off and approved, but he hadn't paid attention to the number of days that were in each month.
No.
And so it was completely messed up. There were 31 days in February, 30 days in May. Every month was off.
And how much had he paid for the calendar?
Close to $1 million.
And you can't, they're unusable.
Unusable, yep.
Stupid.
Yes, absolutely.
Stupid.
So Denoyer was the winner and Banerjee felt like a complete loser at this time.
Which he was.
Mm-hmm. And then in April of 1987, a random guy walked into Nick Denoyer's office in New York City. Mm. Nick was sitting at his desk. He said, "Are you Nick Denoyer?" Nick said something like, "Depends who's asking." The guy pulled out a gun, shot Nick in the face once, and then disappeared. Nick was dead instantly. And there'd only been one witness who'd seen the guy enter Nick's office
Who?
And then he'd vanished. A guy who worked with Nick in that office.
So he just came in and shot him in the head.
Mm-hmm.
It's Banerjee.
That's what
everyone involved assumed.
Yeah.
It's not his fault that he's a brilliant, competent man who knows how to put on a show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, why are men, I mean the terrible ones, mm-hmm. who like, someone, another man did a thing better than you. Get over it.
Mm-hmm. We'll find out what happened in a moment.
I'm sad.
So you can imagine what the media coverage was like. Mr. Chippendale himself had been assassinated in his office, and he'd been a staple of daytime TV.
What year did you say this was again?
87.
Okay, yeah.
So he'd been on board with Chippendales for 6 years.
And 7 years after Dorothy Stratton and Paul Snyder.
Yeah,
okay.
Mm-hmm. They also, like, covering Chippendales, you were going to get good ratings because it meant that you could show clips and pictures of the dancers. Yeah. So there was massive coverage about this, but it was a mystery because there was only this one witness. They only had his description to go off. It's not like they had DNA evidence back then. There were no security cameras or anything.
Yeah, not like now where there's a camera on every corner. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And certainly not in the media. The Chippendales folks couldn't say, we think it was Banerjee, but they all knew.
Everyone thought it. Pretty much all of them.
There were a few people who thought Banerjee could never, ever, ever. He's like a lamb. There's no way. But a lot of people who worked for the company, they'd seen the conflict and they told the cops about it as well. Mm. The cops did investigate Banerjee, but his alibi was airtight. There was nothing to link him to.
Because he hired someone to do it.
But they couldn't prove it. And then, as is common and certainly was common back then, because the case wasn't solved within 72 hours, it just became a cold case because they had to move on to start solving the next murder.
Cold case in 72 hours. Oh, I guess in New York there was a lot of murder back. It was crazy crime in New York in the late 80s.
For sure. Hardly any of the Chippendales resigned, though, even though they were sure Banerjee was responsible.
But you need a job. You need to get paid.
Of course.
Yeah.
Even some of the guys who'd left Chippendales to go to US Mail came back to Chippendales because, they needed the money. They needed the work.
So US Mail just shut down after. Okay.
Yeah. Never got off the ground. But the ownership of the tour went from Denoyer to his siblings because he didn't have a will and they were the next of kin.
Oh, so I was going to say, does that go to Banerjee or?
No.
So, like, because I was thinking straight away, is this a profit-based motive or is it just a ego-based motive? So he's not getting anything out of this really except assuaging his ego by killing him. Okay, sorry. Go.
So the brother, Denoyer's brother, took over and he definitely wasn't, I can do the Adele interview kind of guy.
Yes.
Figured he could run the tour and that he knew the best people to bring on board. So he fired all the best people that Denoyer had hired and trained over the years, brought in some new blood. That new blood stole all the money, left the tour completely broke.
Because you can't do the Adele interview, you idiot.
And so then Banerjee swooped in and said, I'll buy this from you for $1 million. And the family.
That's not enough.
No, but the family were desperate because they'd completely botched running the tour. And even though they firmly believed Banerjee had Denoyer killed, they sold the tour to him. So then he owned 100% of the Chippendales empire.
$1 million. They would make $1 million in like 2 weeks of touring.
So now he had what he wanted in theory,
but
there were all these external threats that he was fixated on, especially the fact that there were all these competing male strip clubs popping up around America. So he was very focused on trying to sue any of them that he thought were treading on his trademarks.
Yeah.
And also at that time, the cultural climate was shifting. So around then in the Reagan era, it was a time of Christian morality and family values and religious right-wing evangelicals were protesting the clubs really hard. And then all of a sudden, male strip clubs started being targeted by arsonists. And it was assumed that it was those religious extremists who, you know, taken their protest a little bit too far.
Notice none of them target female strip clubs because all of those religious evangelicals go to those. Mm. So they don't want to burn down the places they go. They just don't want women to experience
the women are being
sexuality.
Corrupted if they're enjoying something like this, whereas the men are just boys being boys.
Yeah, just, you know, giving, you know, living up to their male instincts, which are given by God.
Chippendales was never targeted by an arsonist, though.
Dynamics. Oh, why wasn't it?
Because Banerjee, he'd very cleverly identified the threat early on, and so he doubled the club's security. And that then just scared off anyone that might try to burn down the Chippendales clubs.
That sounds fishy.
And again, all the publicity around the arsons ultimately just helped get the word out about these all-male reviews that were going on. But Banerjee's philosophy of scandals are just free marketing didn't ring true forever. So in the late 80s, he had a few legal catastrophes happen. Firstly, he was slapped with a major class action lawsuit by a group of black men who'd been refused entry to the club based on their race. And he ended up having to pay them quite a bit of money.
Was that true? They didn't let black men in?
It came to light that Banerjee had a policy that he would only ever have one black man on staff. So he had that sort of element of exoticism for some of the women who were into that fantasy. And he also would not allow black patrons into the club because he thought that was going to make it look like it was a gangster hangout, in his words.
He's a total racist. Yes. Okay, he's a total racist.
Just in case you couldn't tell, he was a total arsewart. Really was a piece. Then it was also alleged that Banerjee'd hired a hitman to try to assassinate the ringleader of the class action lawsuit as well. That didn't reflect well on him. And then also when the cops found out the dancers were running an illegal side hustle as sex workers, Banerjee only fired the black guy who was doing exactly what all the other dancers were doing as well. Okay. Just a real piece of shit.
A real piece of work.
And if that wasn't bad enough to get the club shut down, the overcrowding breaches reached the point that the city of LA finally, after a decade of just serving fine after fine after fine, they shut the venue down in 1988.
They are very lucky there wasn't a major
Absolutely.
Fire.
Absolutely, yeah.
And because people would have died.
Amazing that they let it go on for a decade
Hundreds
before they shut it down.
Hundreds of people would have died Absolutely. With that kind of overcrowding in a small venue. So they finally shut it down.
Shut it down. Banerjee found another location in LA, but it bombed, which didn't really matter because he still had the New York club, which was thriving.
And the tour?
The tour and the merch. And he decided to take the tour international, which was genius. He convinced Michael Jackson's very skeptical tour promoter to set up a tour of the UK around theatres, not clubs, theatres.
Yeah.
This is when it became a real spectacle. It was an instant sellout. It kept growing to the point that at one stage there were 5 different Chippendales troops touring around Europe at the same time.
The money that would be made.
Oh, my God. He should have retired.
Yeah.
He had more money than God, but instead he fixated on trying to shut down all the competitors that were flooding the market. He just couldn't let anyone else have a piece of the pie, even though he had by far the biggest piece.
Yeah.
He tried to sue his competitors for stealing his concept. Didn't work. Tried to force all the clubs around the world to sign exclusive deals with Chippendale, saying they wouldn't take on different troops. That didn't work. And the one troop that really, really got under his skin was Adonis, the Men of Hollywood, the one that had been set up by former Chippendales I mentioned at the beginning.
Oh, so when at the beginning you said that that guy had an assassination threat against him, oh my God, it's totally Steve Banerjee.
It was really, really real. Yep. So Banerjee in 1991 approached his old mate Ray Colone. He was the one who
Ray Colone.
Yes.
Great name.
At the beginning, he was the one who said you got to play disco here if you want to get this place
That's
off
right.
the ground. So he'd been hanging around with Banerjee ever since then and he'd become Banerjee's fixer. He would just do whatever Banerjee needed in terms of odd jobs, quite literally like plumbing.
What's the bet problems? Ray Colone's name was like Ray Thompson? And when he entered the club scene, he was like, no, it's Ray Colone.
It's spelt C-O-L-O-N. So I don't think he would have chosen this because I guarantee most people would have called him Ray Colone.
Well, then it probably was Colone. Why are you saying Colone?
It's Colone.
How do you know?
All the documentaries and podcasts and everything.
But I mean,
say
what about
Colone.
Colin Powell?
That's C-O-L-I-N.
No, wasn't his name Colon?
Colin Powell. Yeah, Colin, but it was spelled Powell. C-O-L-I-N.
So why didn't they call him Colin? Because America's weird.
Very.
America calls Craig Craig.
Yeah, that one always gets me.
Yeah, me too. It's so weird.
And Aaron and Aaron?
Yeah, why?
They just...
Craig isn't Craig. It's Craig. Mm. And it's like you say to an American, how do you say Greg? And they go, Greg. And you, how do you say Craig? And they go, Craig. It's like, I'm sorry. Mm. Those two don't rhyme. You are weird. Anyway.
Yeah, so now Banerjee needed cologne to go and fix this Adonis problem. Mm-hmm. And the direction he gave was that he wanted several members of Adonis killed while they're on tour of the UK so it couldn't be linked back to Banerjee.
Obvious solution. Mm. Obvious solution.
Because it'll send a message to everybody else. He told Cologne he'd pay $25,000 for each member of Adonis he could take out, and Cologne accepted the job, but he wasn't going to actually do it himself. He roped in a buddy of his who was a guy called Strawberry. He had red hair, so that was the name he'd given himself.
Uh-huh.
Cologne gave Strawberry a brief over a few drinks one night, and according to Strawberry, he was scared when he heard what the plan was. As he tells it, he only said that he'd do the job because he thought, oh crap, I know too much and they might actually kill me if I refuse to take this job on. So he agreed to do it. Cologne.
I think Colin suits him better, but yeah. And he's setting up a murder. Let's call him Colin.
He equipped Strawberry with an eyedropper bottle full of cyanide, which was enough to kill more than 230 people, and a syringe, and told him his mission was to kill the MC of Adonis and his manager and a few of other dancers, as many as he had time for, basically. Then he drove Strawberry to the airport, bought him a plane ticket to England, and watched him board the flight. Strawberry landed in England, ditched the cyanide and needles in the airport toilet immediately. He wasn't going to go through with this plan. He hung around in the UK for a few days pretending he was sort of scoping out what was going on. Then he jumped on a plane back to the States, went to the FBI office in Los Angeles.
Smart.
Walked in and told them exactly what he'd been hired to do.
Good job, Colin. Uh-huh. Smart.
Strawberry.
Strawberry. Sorry. So Steve Banerjee at this point must have completely lost his mind.
Yes.
But then also he's lost his mind and he's got people willing to go through on his whims like Colin when he's clearly nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky Strawberry was like, I'm going to put a stop to this nonsense.
Yep. I mean, the FBI, once they'd heard the whole story, they did kind of think, we think maybe you would have gone through with this if it was more feasible than it was, but you probably saw that this was going to be incredibly difficult to stick a guy with cyanide.
What was the plan? You've got an eyedropper of cyanide and you have been told to kill, what, about 10 people. How was he going to do it? Just walk up to them and go, open your mouth.
Sneak up on them.
Like how?
The original brief from Cologne was try to do it in a crowded place. So like if they're on a dance floor or something and just go and stick it in them there. But he realised he wasn't going to be able to do it.
You'd get one person max like that.
Yeah.
And how would you get, like, the boss man? Like, you're not the MC. Like, that's so ridiculous.
It hadn't been thought through, no.
It really hadn't been thought through.
And it all sounded preposterous to the FBI agents as well. And they thought, okay, maybe Strawberry's just a nutcase. But they warned the dancers regardless and started an investigation, which meant...
So that was that night that you mentioned
that
at the start.
They read off stage.
Trying to kill you by sticking you with cyanide. Oh, my God.
Yep. An assassin has just become an informant for us and they were being paid to kill you. The first thing they needed to do was get Strawberry to call Cologne and get him to say something incriminating on tape, which was too easy. Strawberry just called Cologne and said, are you sure that poison's going to work? And Cologne was like, well, yeah, but I don't know, maybe... hit them with a hammer or a brick or something on the head first to knock them unconscious and then that'll make it easier for you.
So he just totally said anything he needed to
say. And he confirmed the names of the targets and the amount of payment and the FBI were like, oh, heavens, this is real. So they put Strawberry in witness protection program and arrested Cologne. He spent months sitting in jail, not talking at all. Almost 7 months before Cologne's lawyer finally convinced him to snitch on Banerjee. When he was kind of planning that he was just nobly going to take the fall for Banerjee because he was quite unwell at this stage in his life. He had kidney disease and I think at first he thought, I'll do the noble thing and I'll just die in jail fairly soon.
That's not noble. That's dumb.
It is very. So he snitched. And when he snitched, he didn't just snitch about the Adonis murder plot. He told the FBI that Banerjee paid him to burn down
the
competing street
clubs. I was
going
to say the arsons. Mm-hmm. They blamed it on evangelical Christians, but for once, evangelical Christians weren't the worst.
That's right. Someone was worse.
Once. Okay.
Banerjee had paid him to shoot at ex-Chippendales dancers who'd gone off to make their own calendars just to send a message, like don't actually kill them but just shoot at them so they know there's a threat.
You don't own the concept of men stripping off. Mm-hmm. You don't own it.
Banerjee'd asked Cologne to kill a doctor who'd pissed him off somehow, as well as the doctor's 12-year-old son.
What? Banerjee's crazy. Mm-hmm.
He'd just decided the solutions to his problems kill after
everyone.
He'd killed Denoyer, which... Yes, Cologne confessed to. He was like, oh, well, this is...
Cologne was the one who went in and shot.
Cologne had paid another guy to do it.
Oh,
but
wow.
Had Cologne not confessed this to the FBI, Denoyer's case never
forever.
Would have gone solved. But he said, Banerjee paid me to arrange that murder. So this was huge if it was all true, but it was kind of hard to tell if Cologne really was telling the truth. So they started verifying things. They verified all the cases of arson. That all checked out. Mm. Then they set up a sting operation with the guy who Cologne had paid to kill Denoyer. He confessed everything on tape. Mm. So he ended up being tried for that murder. They then, though, needed to link it all back to Banerjee conclusively. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be tricky because Banerjee was refusing to have any contact with Cologne at all. He knew he'd been arrested and therefore must be compromised.
And what was this, late 80s?
This is early 90s.
And so there's no email trails. There's no, like, literally they would have just talked to each other on the phone, which back then mm-hmm. was not recorded or documented mm-hmm. in any way. So if you wanted to, you could just refuse to cooperate. How are they ever going to prove it?
That's right.
There's no text message. There's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It became very, very tricky. Meanwhile, Banerjee at this time, to try to keep Cologne quiet, he was paying all his legal fees, but he'd sort of set up this elaborate way that he'd take a briefcase full of cash to drop it off to one guy, who'd drop it off to another guy, who'd drop it off to a bar, who'd take it to Cologne's lawyer. Because he was paranoid, he really thought about making sure there were no trails that could lead things back to him. The FBI spent months orchestrating a really elaborate sting operation to finally get Banerjee to condemn himself on tape. They went to the lengths of making it look like Cologne had been sent home on house arrest and then he'd fled the country so that then he could try to lure Banerjee to come over to Europe. First off, he tried Italy and then ultimately it ended up being Switzerland.
But the FBI were like taking him to those places.
Yes. Mm-hmm, which was all a massive risk because he could have run away at some point. But he proved again and again and again, I'm on your side. I really want you to get this Banerjee guy. He is a piece of shit and I see that now. I should never have stayed friends with him. Banerjee, he was certain that Cologne had been compromised. So he was very, very, very cagey. They had a few meetings here and there. Ultimately, finally... Cologne did get Banerjee alone in a Swiss hotel room, which the FBI had bugged. Banerjee showed up wearing a wig and a fake mustache. So nervy, really just couldn't bring himself to believe that he could trust Cologne. Somehow, Cologne, such a great actor, managed to calm Banerjee down, and then they spent 5 hours discussing all the different crimes that had been committed. Over the course of years.
For someone so paranoid, Banerjee's really stupid.
Yes, and so arrogant because one of the things that really was the final nail in the coffin was him saying, look, even if you did talk, the FBI still wouldn't be able to prove that I gave you that gun, that I gave you Nick Denoyer's address and that I paid you X amount to
unless
have him
they
executed.
Listen to this recording of what I just said.
Yep. But he didn't think that the FBI had jurisdiction to be off American soil. That's why he'd only agreed to finally meet with Cologne.
But he
overseas.
Also didn't know that in perpetuity meant forever.
Yeah.
So I think he's an idiot.
Yeah. He thought he was a lot smarter than he was. Now, I have condensed that whole thing right down. This sting operation... was its own saga, could be its own, just the gist. There is an episode about this in a series that I'll tell you about later called Curse of the Chippendales. Sorry, an episode of the documentary series, Curse of the Chippendales, and the podcast series, Welcome to Your Fantasy. Mm-hmm. And there are so many twists and turns along the way here. And I want you to listen because hearing the FBI agent involved describe what happened and how unorthodox it was is fantastic. And also, you get to hear how the FBI agents ended up becoming really good friends with Ray Colon to the point that they were donating blood for blood transfusions that he needed, and they were taking him to his dialysis appointments. Like, they became his carers.
I kind of feel like I like Colon, but then I'm like, you organized the assassination of, what's his name?
Denoyer.
Yeah. So even though you drew the line at infecting 10 strippers with cyanide, you did kill someone else, or at least orchestrated the killing of someone else.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wouldn't be giving him blood is what I'm saying.
They bonded with him. Keeping him alive, quite important if they wanted to then put Banerjee on trial, which they very much did. They didn't arrest Banerjee for another 7 months after they had his confession because they just had to make sure they had all their ducks lined up because he was very wealthy and they knew he could wriggle off the hook if they didn't come up with an airtight case. But finally, he was arrested again. Huge news story, Chippendales, showing lots of clips of beefcakes in G-strings and talking about this incredible scandal. Banerjee used his money, of course, just like Elizabeth Holmes, to delay the trial for as long as possible. It wasn't until October 1994 that he was finally due to take the stand, but the trial didn't go ahead because he pled guilty. He figured there was no way he was going to get off for these crimes, so he just confessed, knowing full well he was going to be sentenced to a minimum of 25 years in prison, which was going to be the rest of his life, essentially, because he was in his late 40s. Then, the night before he was due to be sentenced, he took his own life by hanging himself in his jail cell.
Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes, and so that meant justice kind of couldn't be served, but it also meant from a legal standpoint that the trial remained incomplete, which meant that the government couldn't then seize his assets. And so ownership of Chippendales, which the government was hoping they'd take control of, instead went to Banerjee's wife.
So he did it for purely commercial reasons.
Yes, he didn't want the government to take his business. He wanted it to go to his wife and then ultimately to his kids.
Yeah.
His wife hired people to keep the Chippendales brand alive for a while, but then she died shortly after that of cancer. She had a very sad relationship with him. I feel sorry for her. And then custody of her kids went to her sister along with all of her assets, which included Chippendales. And the only reason that I mention this is because it's hugely ironic that the husband of that sister worked for the FBI. So a guy who was an agent at the FBI ended up becoming the owner of Chippendales.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Then the people who kind of helped bring him down, one of them did get it in the end.
Ended up profiting from it, they ended up selling the company and then it kept changing hands every couple of years throughout the 90s. Your mate Lou Pearlman owned them for a while.
Shut up.
Around 1996.
Oh, it's like every sleazy hustler has tried to have fingers in Chippendales. Ew.
But each investor wanted to keep the brand alive and tried to sort of ignore the scandals, We've got a squeaky clean image. The New York club stayed open until 2001. It only shut down because 9/11 shut down a lot of businesses over there. But the tour kept going and it's kept evolving to sort of keep up with the tastes of its patrons. At the moment, it has a very millennial nostalgic vibe. There's lots of Backstreet Boys and NSYNC numbers in there to cater to our demographic.
I'd go to that.
Oh, and you would love it.
I'd go to that in a heartbeat.
So they've got a residency in Vegas at the moment. That enjoyed a huge surge in popularity after Magic Mike came out in 2012. That created like a renaissance for male stripping. They had to start doing online streaming thanks to COVID and they've kept going with that because it turned out to be quite profitable. They're still going strong, as are their many competitors. And even though they were some of the most disgusting pieces of vomit that history's ever known and that we've ever discussed on this show, it's because of Paul Snyder and Steve Banerjee. They made this happen. And so that, my dear, is just the gist of the Chippendales crime spree.
Well, look, I think it needs to be said that Paul Snyder and Steve Banerjee never imagined it would be any kind of vehicle for female empowerment.
Not at all.
They were not thinking about flipping the gender dynamics and being subversive in the face of sexism. They were just thinking about money. So, wow.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Thank you. Fascinating story. And
really
I'm sure you all want more. There is a fantastic documentary. So a lot of things came out this year, 2021, because it's 30 years since they had that assassination attempt.
Yeah, I was
wondering.
And
that's when it started to come to light.
Because I watched a 2020 episode about it, which, you know, 2020 goes for like 20 minutes. So it barely went into any of this detail. But I was wondering why they had released that this year. Mm. So it's been 30 years.
And so a documentary came out this year called Curse of the Chippendales. Mm. 4 parts. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Highly recommend. The characters that you get to meet who used to work as dancers or as producers. Mm. Like, it's just sensational. There's also a podcast series called Welcome to Your Fantasy that came out this year. That's a 9-part series. Wonderful host, really, really well researched and great interviews in that one as well. And then a couple of things that are coming up, some fictionalized stuff. So Hulu's doing a series with Kumail Nanjiani
as
Steve Banerjee.
Oh, he'd be great.
He's going to be fantastic. Yeah. And also a movie's coming with Dev Patel as Steve Banerjee.
Oh,
so two
awesome works
in production right now. Mm-hmm. And there are already a few movies that are out there. Naveen Andrews, who plays Sonny in The Dropout.
Stop it.
He played Steve Banerjee in a 2000
movie. I didn't know he played Sonny in The Dropout.
Yeah. He's going to be really
good. I remember him from, I mean, obviously he's from Lost, but also he was in that movie Diana with Naomi Watts. And I went to the premiere of that with Tony, and it was one of those movies that didn't mean to be funny, but it was. And even at the premiere, people in the cinema were laughing their heads off at every, particularly the scenes between Naomi Watts and Naveen Andrews, because they were so cheesy and lame. So I'm glad he's doing better things now.
Well, that movie was apparently atrocious, and I didn't even bother watching it because I read the reviews and they were like,
oh,
this is garbage.
He was good in Lost.
He was very, very good in Lost. Yes.
That was a really good one. I was on
the edge
of my seat the whole time.
Way to end the year.
Yes, what a way to end the year. We have a couple little, on Christmas Day we're going to, tomorrow, re-release another ep, so just keep an eye out on the feed. And on New Year's Day, we'll be doing a 2021 wrap-up, as has become our tradition, because we did it once, and so now we're doing it again. And what a year, my friend.
Mm.
I was in the nut house. You've had many different shades of tan. It's been a wild ride.
It really has. I mean, personally, selfishly, I've mostly had a fantastic year.
You have.
I'm very, very, very lucky. My mantra this year has been, do you remember years ago there was an Australian newsreader, she tried to say, when she was talking about a lotto winner, she tried to say the luckiest man in the country, and instead she accidentally said the luckiest cunt in the mantry. And so all year I've been telling myself, I am the luckiest cunt in this mantry. So I've been very fortunate.
You've basically had a year avoiding COVID by being in beautiful exotic locations.
Yes. Yeah,
and
is exactly
you were saying
what I did
before, you have managed to get through the last 2 years. You have not had a single COVID test.
I haven't needed to.
Because you haven't needed to.
No, I haven't.
I've had like 11. But yeah, you've had a good year. Mm-hmm. So fucking good for fucking you. All right. Don't beep that. Let us have 2 swears at the end of the year, Lindsay. Please, please. Okay, we love you all. We'll do a little Christmas Day introduction of our Santa ep, which is amazing. Re-listen to it, and we'll see you on New Year's Day.
Bye.
Bye.
Listener.